Thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello and welcome to this very special episode of Band Biographies. Not just special because it's the first main episode with an intro by me, but it's also the first of what I hope will be a continuing trend of interview-based episodes. On this episode, I talked to one of the founders of the Pete Shelley Memorial Campaign, Paul Lally, and two more members of the group, Paul Banks and Ellie Porter. I mentioned the work of the Pete Shelley Memorial Campaign in the Buzzcocks episode, and that they'd not quite raised enough money to get a blue plaque put up to commemorate him on Shelley's childhood home in Lee, just outside Manchester in Wigan. Well, on Friday the 4th of December 2020, 2 days before the 2-year anniversary of Shelley's passing, the campaign finally reached its goal, and the blue plaque was unveiled by Malcolm Garrett, the artist who was recently awarded an MBE and designed the early Buzzcocks album and single sleeves. However, Wigan Council recognised the worth of the campaign to raise Shelley's profile locally, nationally and internationally, and they paid for the plaque, leaving the Pete Shelley Memorial Campaign to divert the funds to other initiatives that you're going to hear about in this interview, including the lasting memorial to Shelley, as well as local educational initiatives. Coming up is my chat with Paul, Ellie and Paul. But before that, why not go to PeteShelleyMemorial.com and buy some merchandise to support the campaign? Because, as you're about to hear, their work is far from done. I'm here with Paul Lally, Paul Banks and Eleanor Porter. And what I want to do first off, just ask a couple of fairly easy questions, I think, just to get the ball rolling. Going round, we'll figure out an order to do this, but for each of you, where did your love of music begin, and more specifically punk rock? Now, who wants to take that first?
Don't mind taking that first.
Yeah, go for it.
I think my love of music really was my brother, I think, was responsible really for that. I mean, my age is, I've just missed out on punk. I think in 1977 I was 8 years old, so I sort of missed out on the joy really. Well, my brother was a bit older, and he was the person who brought all those fantastic records into the household. So when he used to nip out of the house, I used to play all his records. That was the sort of idea. But he was a big Fall fan, and I think the first time that I ever heard Buzzcocks was when he brought home Live at Electric Circus EP. It was that 10-inch Virgin record, and I think Buzzcocks was the last track, Time's Up, I think it was. And it's when Pete introduces the song, and you just get, you know, that the way that he did it, he thought it was just sounding so different and so intriguing. And I think from then, really, that sort of, you know, unusual way of doing things, it sort of was a big inspiration to me. So really, when my brother was out, I used to play all the records, and that's how I got into punk, really. And, you know, I think Paul's a bit older than me, so I think he had a more of a direct experience of punk. But yeah, it's definitely my brother Simon who's responsible for my love of music and love of punk rock.
So you were playing the records when your brother was out of the house. Was it forbidden when he was in the house? Was it sneaking into the room? And
definitely. He brought this Pioneer Stereo at the time. He was, I think he was working at BNFL at Risley or something. He had quite a decent job at the time, even though we never had a decent stereo in the house. So it was, I'd never heard anything like that before. So when you put these records on, they sounded absolutely magnificent. So yeah, it was just an opportunity. I thought, right, he's got out for a couple of hours. I'll see if I can just educate myself with some great music. So it was, I have really fond memories of that. I did confess to my brother later on that that's why some of his records got scratched, because I was probably jumping up and down to a lot of them. But he's forgiven me now. You know, he's a little fella.
Good stuff. And Paul, as Paul Banks said, Paul Lally, you've got a little bit more of a first-hand experience with punk.
Yeah, I suppose I'm the old man in the campaign. In 1977, I was 13. Spiral Scratch, obviously, massive to me. It was one record I went out to buy. I was aware every Buzzcocks were. I was aware every Pete Shelley was, because myself and my mates locally, obviously all being from Lee, we knew Pete. You'd see him around from time to time. His brother had a record shop in Lee, and not long after that, we knew him. And because of that, there was always that bit more special, Buzzcocks, because they were close to home. But obviously, at 13 years of age, 1977, punk was just breaking, really. He wasn't rebellious at 13. It was something to latch on to, something to get involved with. And it sort of like developed from there as more and more punk bands came along. Obviously, you got into them, and that was your music then for the rest of your life. You know, that the way that made you feel at 13 years of age, that was your music for the rest of your life, and still is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think your brain at that age, around about kind of 12, 13, 14, is that's when it's most like a sponge, if you like, especially for stuff like music. I know that a lot of the music that I was listening to around about 13 to 15 is still the kind of music that I go back to, because it's like nourishment, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at that age as well, in 1977, it were different times. Schooling wasn't the best. You know, it was sort of like, you was there to be bullied by the teachers, sort of thing. So you had all that sort of thing going on. Policing as well in that time wasn't the best. You know, you couldn't go anywhere. You know, keep watching what the police were doing. So that type of music, a lot of the bands were singing about that type of stuff that you could relate to. Mm. I know Pete, you know, he had a different sort of like take on things, and his type of songs were different. But you can see why punk was a big attraction to you. You could relate to it. You could relate to what they were singing about, and it was a big draw, was punk.
Yeah. Well, again, it was like we were talking about when we were setting up this interview earlier on in the week, that the punk rock movement back in the 70s especially, it was easy to get involved because the people that were performing were also the people that were in the pubs and the clubs and what have you. You know, they weren't inaccessible. They were they were right there.
Yeah. And there's something else as well, you know, when we talk about generations, different generations, I remember one of my favourite bands were the Angelic Upsets, and I know they come probably a year and a half after the, you know, when punk broke, but I loved the Angelic Upsets, and I would always play them at home, and my dad, he hated punk, he used to say it was loud, I'd turn it down, I'd turn that off. But my dad actually liked the Angelic Upsets.
Oh, really?
And the reason he liked the Angelic Upsets is because my dad was a staunch union rep.
Right.
So obviously, because they sang songs about the time, you know, anti-Thatcher songs and things like that, my dad, he sort of like liked them. And to me, I thought, brilliant. It's amazing. And my dad now, he's 75 now, my dad. But, you know, I can relate back to them times and think, you know, I can't believe it. You know, they're my band, you know. Well, what are you doing? You can't like them, you know. But it just shows you, doesn't it? You know, it's the appeal of it. For different reasons.
Yeah, it was music by the people for the people, wasn't it?
Exactly,
you know, if you've got a relation to you know, unions and workers' rights and that kind of thing, then you're going to buy into that message that they're giving out.
Yes, indeed.
And someone who's got slightly different perspective, perhaps, Ellie, as the youngest of the lot of us. What about you? Where was your first musical revelation?
I think it's always been probably the biggest part of my life, but through my dad mostly. I mean, he was a punk when everyone else was, when it was like around to be. But the first proper shock to me was I went to see the Stones at the Etihad, and Buzzcocks were supporting, and I think that was what set it off really. But the whole punk thing was when I went with my dad to see The Exploited.
Right.
In 2008. And at the time, I was into boy bands and whatever was popular, shall I say.
Sure.
I mean, I've always liked rock music and stuff, but it never really struck a chord until then, at least. But it was always through him. It's always been in the back of my head or playing somewhere in the distance.
So there was a lot of that kind of music on in the house while you were growing up, and it's just
always.
Osmosis.
Yeah, always.
nice. I suppose we'll go back the other way. Actually, no, I'll go back to Paul Banks again for the first one, because it'll be an interesting question to tell back round to for Ellie, I think. So, Paul Banks, what was your first single or album that you bought?
The this might be quite embarrassing, actually. I think it was, do you remember the single Toast by the Q-Tips that Paul Young sang? I can't remember when it was released. It was in the 70s. There was a record shop in Lee called Rumbelows, and it was sort of in this basement. And I just remember hearing it on the radio, and it had this sort of catchy, I can't remember what the lyrics are, but it's all about just singing about bread. It just sounded really daft. And obviously it's like, it's a bit of a, I don't know if it's a great song or a crap song, but it was, it just appealed to me in that childish sort of way. And I remember buying that single and playing it to death. And then my parents were, you know, they're into Elvis, they're into Johnny Cash and stuff like that. So I suppose the explosion in terms of, you know, being really into music happened, as I mentioned, with my brother, really, when he started bringing, you know, better music into the household. Although I do love Johnny Cash, I have to say.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really sort of a massive buyer of music either, really, until really maybe 20s and 30s, really. It's only when I, you know, sort of had money in my pocket, as well as, you know, being into Buzzcocks, Pete Shelley. I mean, I'm a really big Fall fan. I think that's where my real love of music started, and that was the band that I've probably seen more so to any bands that I'm into. But you know, the Buzzcocks records are just sort of, it's, you just can't believe how great they are. I think that's the sort of thing that it's, I think many people have said this, have always compared it to sort of the punk Beatles, really, and that's the quality of the music, I think, really. And you know, I saw Buzzcocks maybe 4 or 5 times, but this was like in sort of 2000s and 2010s, really. It was not earlier on. But it was, you know, it's when they were doing the gigs at the Apollo when Howard DeVoto joined them again to do that sort of reformation of the band, and it was an amazing gig. Completely chaotic, but completely amazing.
Yeah, because didn't they get all three lineups of the band? Yeah. They had the original lineup with DeVoto, and did they bring Garth Smith back for that?
I think I was a bit too drunk, to be honest, to take notice what was going on. But I do remember Howard DeVoto going, and there was just a sense of chaos about the entire thing, and it was brilliant, and that's exactly what we wanted, really, when we were watching it. But I think I saw them last in Liverpool. I think it was the Casimir in Liverpool with my wife, Nicola, and basically got made deaf by, because we were next to one of the speakers, and it was the loudest gig I think I'd ever been to. you know, they're all fond memories. I suppose back to that question, it's I've gone off on a tangent now from the first single I bought until the entire history of the music that I love. But
no, absolutely not. I mean, the other question would be, you know, gigs and favourite and most seen bands. What was the Fall like to go and see? Because I can't imagine that being straightforward.
Completely hit or miss with the Fall, I think, and that's well documented, I think. And the first time I saw the Fall properly, I think, was in 1987, when they were doing, I think it was the Friends Experiment tour. And it was fantastic. And then I think I saw, again, the Fall most when they're in the sort of latter years, really, when I suppose, you know, Marky Smith was a bit poorly at the end, really, as well. And it was... But there was still an incredible band to watch. You know, you just didn't know what you were going to get. Mm. I think one of the last gigs I went to was at like a social club in Salford. And again, it was just complete chaos and one of the loudest gigs I've ever been to. But it was just so unusual. You know, that was what was beautiful about the Fall. But then you could go to them the next week and it's the worst gig that you've ever been to. You know, they do 20 minutes and then walk off stage. And but that's the risk you've got to take when you're a Fall fan.
Definitely.
It's all good. It's all good for the soul, you know. It's a bit like supporting the football club who in the sort of, you know, second division. They're never going to get in the charts, but you think they're the best football team in the world, you know. That's what being a Fall fan's like, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And Paul Lally, again, first music that you ever bought, gigs that you've been to see. Tell us about it.
No one's
got a cool answer to first record bought like that. That's where we have to just leave all our pretensions at the door.
I think my main when I was buying records, what I remember is wagging it from school with my mates, getting on the 26 bus, going to Manchester, hanging around HMV and Virgin and what have you, and we were buying records there. And I remember Ratchet's the first Stranglers album, the Clash's first album, Damn by the Damned, albums like that. And then we used to trade them, you know, we'd all buy them individually, then we'd trade them between each other. And that's what I recall about my early music.
So you've got cool answers to that.
Well, I suppose if I can go back to when I was about 10, I think I remember... buying a Mud album out of my pocket money. I think probably about 1975-ish or something like that, before punk, obviously. But yeah. That was what was big at the time, I suppose. But
absolutely.
I was never really into him. I just bought the album because I liked how it looked. It had four love hearts on the front, and it had each member of the band in these love hearts, and it just looked cool. I suppose that prompted me to buy it out of my pocket money.
I mean, the mod scene was quite a sharp look, wasn't it? The Vespers and the suits and all that. It was a strong look.
Yeah. I remember when the mod scene came back, probably about 1979-ish. And I remember being at a punk myself in Lee, and there were a few mods around as well, around about the same time as in 79. So I remember it coming back in 79. But it was always, there was a big difference between punk and mod. You was either punk or you were mod. There was no in between. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. One of the guitarists in one of the bands that I play with is absolutely against playing any mod records. We're not allowed to play any mod songs, no jam, none of that Weller rubbish, you know, even though I love the jam and I'd love to play it. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's dyed in the wool like a stick of rock.
Well, I always relate to the jam as being a punk band, because when I was buying records, obviously in 1977-ish, I think it'll be In the City or something like that, was their release. And that would be one what I'd bought. Down the Tube Station, it'd be another one what I would have bought. All the early jam stuff I would relate to the punk scene. But you have to remember, in the early days of punk, there weren't loads of bands like what came later in the later 70s. So I think a lot of bands got record deals on the back of punk, because every label wanted their own punk band, didn't they? And that's how a lot of bands came about, really.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things that I've kind of learned through doing the podcast, in fact, because I've started with the kind of original five or six bands, and some of the initial punk bands as well, like Chelsea, was really more of a mod band when it started out. And a lot of them kind of evolved from playing kind of 50s, 60s garage rock tunes to, and then becoming this harder, faster style after the Sex Pistols came out. But yeah, it seems like there were like five or six bands. When Malcolm McLaren put on the punk special, it was literally the whole of the UK punk scene under one roof, and there's like seven bands. You had the Sex Pistols, yeah. The Damned, Susie and the Banshees, Subway Sect, Buzzcocks, and I think there was a French band as well. That was it, basically, in the whole country.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, locally, in Manchester, obviously, we had bands like... obviously, the story was like Pete went to London with Edward DeVoto, saw the Sex Pistols, brought it all back to Manchester. But we had a couple of bands, you know, around Manchester. Slaughter and the Dogs were around at that time, and they'd played early days as well with Buzzcocks. So there was a couple of bands around on the Manchester scene in the early days.
Yeah, and who are you watching? Which is the band that you've seen the most?
The bands who I've seen the most, well, this is going to be so unpunk now, because probably the band I've seen the most, I'd say Echo and the Bunnymen.
Right.
And if I said, you know, what's the best gigs I've been to, I would say Echo and the Bunnymen, The Cure. And I don't know, I sort of like look at it in a different way. I look at it like, I don't know if it's because I'm a tight old man, but I look at it like value for money, because Echo and the Bunnymen can play for 2 hours and it's all the old classics, and you feel like you're getting value for money. Same with The Cure. The Cure can play for 3.5 hours with play the entire extensive catalogue, and you know, you feel as though I'm good with that, you know, getting real good value for money here. Yeah, well, back in 79, another gig I remember, locally in Lee, we had a weekend pop festival. It was called Manchester Meets Liverpool Halfway, and halfway between Manchester and Liverpool is Lee, and it was a festival that was arranged by Tony Wilson, obviously Factory Records, and there were bands from Liverpool on. There was Echo of the Bunny members on that, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. And then you had the Manchester bands, Joy Division, The Distractions played there. And it was an absolute flop. There was about 30 people that turned up the entire weekend. And I remember me and my mates at the time, you could get in over the fields at the back. And they had security all around. And they were like Hell's Angels of security. So if you saw your opportunity, you could sneak in, but then you had to try and keep a low profile, because obviously they knew you'd not bought a ticket, and there were nobody you could hide amongst. And then as soon as they see you, they'd throw you out, and then you'd be like that all weekend, but it was in for hours in the night. So we did catch quite a few bands from that, and it's a shame really that it wasn't really well attended, but because there were some absolutely brilliant bands on there that all went on, you know, to bigger and better things as well. But I do remember that. Sticks in the mind, that one.
Yeah, I bet. Amazing. And so, again, if we come around to Ellie, it's probably quite presumptuous of me to think it, but you're from a generation that maybe hasn't even grown up with physical CDs. I don't know, you might be different.
The first piece of music I ever bought myself was a CD single, but you are right in that it is mostly digital, and I can't find myself talking to my friends about records anyway, put it that way.
Right, right. Yeah, I bet. Are you a bit kind of on your own in that respect, or is punk music and kind of alt rock and things like that, is there still a click for that kind of thing?
It is still relevant, and there is quite a big community online for younger people who are into it, say, but it's a lot harder to find in real life.
Because I think one of the things that has happened in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, is that music's less tribal. I know when I was younger, it was quite obvious who was into rock music, who was into the more poppy UK garagey kind of dancey stuff. And it was very obvious who you could go and kind of make friends with and who you were supposed to avoid. Yeah. It doesn't seem quite so clear cut nowadays.
No, definitely not.
So what was that first single, if you don't mind me asking? Because I know you were saying about, you know, your pop groups and stuff. I'm going to undermine your punk credibility now.
It was by a band called The Wanted in about 2013. Yeah. Right. But the first single I ever bought, like a disc, like a vinyl disc, was Bohemian Rhapsody in a charity shop in Wales. So I've got that to my name.
There you go. You clawed it back. It's all good. I mean, I know that my first single was the Bare Naked Ladies 1 week, so I don't know whether that's cool or not, really. Just to make everyone feel a little bit better. So what about bands and stuff? I know you were talking about The Exploited. Did you ever get to see them live?
Yeah, I went to see them in 2018 with my dad. There was a support band on called In Evil Hour. They ended up being much better than The Exploited were, dare I say it. But I've got tickets to see other bands, but obviously that's been postponed.
This year... Don't get me started on this year. Yeah, I think The Exploited can be a little bit hit and miss as well, a little bit like The Fall. I think Watty especially has had his troubles with health over the last couple of years. But I know what you mean about going to see a band. Because were you disappointed when the support band ended up being the band that you preferred?
To be honest, I came out of it and I wasn't really aware of what had happened. I didn't realise till a few weeks later that I actually enjoyed the support band more.
You needed time to kind of process it.
I needed time to think about what he was saying. I couldn't hear him when I was there. Google the lyrics.
Because I've had the same thing. I've gone to gigs to see a specific band and then been blown away by the support act. But there's always that thing of like, oh, well, actually, no one else knows about this band. You can kind of be like, oh, guys, listen to this. This is amazing. Yeah. And you can be the discoverer of that. I used to like being that guy.
Yeah.
What was the last gig any of you went to see before lockdown as well? Back in February, I got to see The Interrupters. And that was the tail end of February. Like literally the next week was lockdown. And at the time we thought it was only going to be a few weeks. And now here we are almost a year later. And I've not seen a live gig since. Live music is one of the things I really miss. So what was the last gig you went to see before this whole shit show of a year?
It's difficult to remember, isn't it? I think our brains have all been, you know, collectively liquidized over the past 12 months. I think it was Squeeze, I think.
Oh, nice.
I bought my partner Nicola's just a massive Squeeze fan. I got her tickets as a present. But honestly, they were incredible. I think, you know, they're just, you know, incredible musicians. They've got an incredible sort of back catalog. I think it was a lot of what Paul was saying about it. You know, it was just solid entertainment for 2 hours. And it was, you just forget how many great songs that they actually did actually produce Squeeze. So that was the last, you know, and again, it's all sort of in a distant haze, isn't it? When people are all sort of, you know, thousands of people in a room dancing and enjoying themselves. But it was, a great memory to have, I think, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I know that at the Interrupters gig, I wasn't really looking at the stage. I was having far too much fun dancing with people and getting hammered. But no, Squeeze are one of those bands that have got like such an enormous back catalogue, and you have you don't realise how many of their songs that you know.
Yeah.
They're incredible, especially like Up the Junction, I think, is an absolute master.
Yeah, they played that, you know, Cool for Cats, and, you know, it was just great. They know how to entertain and great musicianship, but also just down-to-earth people as well. There's no pretentiousness about it at all. Just a really, really good night. I think the next band I'm going to be watching is Echo and the Bunnymen, and I don't think Paul Lally's forgiven me for having getting tickets. I don't think Paul, you didn't get tickets for that gig, did you? I did. Which is really... So, yeah, I think it has put a few strains on the campaign, to be honest. That I think he's been wanting to boot me out of it because I haven't got tickets. He hasn't. But yeah, I'm sorry about that, Paul.
It's fine. I've been forgiven. And I've not given up hope on getting any yet, so this time, yeah.
What about you guys? What was your last? What was the last gig you went to see before the lockdown?
Well, mine. I think Paul's having problems with his memory because mine was in February. Because obviously we put on gigs on the memorial campaign, and that's what we've been doing for 2 years. And we put on an excellent one in February, which was in Lee, and it featured the Drones, the Distractions, Fast Cars, Not Sensibles, Benefit State, so like some big bands what we put on there. And to be fair to Paul, we don't get to watch the gigs, to be honest. We're in and out, we're on the door, then we're in, and it's like that. But obviously February was, that gig, it was an excellent night, and that was my last gig. Before that, obviously, I know I've told you my son's in a band called The Lottery Winners. Mm. I will see them quite a lot. So I'm quite active gig-wise the last couple of years, really. And then hopefully maybe Echo of the Bunnymen if I can get all this, a couple of tickets,
And Ellie, what about you?
The last concert I went to was in November last year, which is probably now the longest I've been without being to one. It was a tribute concert, a punk night, fittingly. There was Bootleg Bonder with Clem Burke, Complete Clash, I think they were called, the Sex Pistols Experience and the Ramonas. And weirdly enough, that's happened to be now my favourite concert. But the week that lockdown started, it was in March, I had tickets to see Stiff Little Fingers, and it was 2 days before the concert, and I went in lockdown. So.
Gutted.
That gig that Ellie's referring to there in November with Blondie and Ramonas, that's the same date as we had, I remember the day, I think it was 23rd of November, because we had a Peach LA gig that night, and we had Buzzcocks tribute band on. It was absolutely amazing, fantastic. If you couldn't see them, you would actually think they were the real thing. So, another good event that we put on. It was, but it was the same date as the, because I know there were people that came to our gig that actually had tickets for that gig in Manchester that Ellie was just talking about. And they were like, this goes, oh, I've had to buy tickets, what, come here, we've already got tickets for there. And without that, it was, I think we need to look at dates a bit more closely sometimes.
Have the gigs that you've put on for the campaign been well attended?
They've been really well attended. The last three we put on in Lee all sold out before the actual dates, which is quite eye-opening. And what surprised me, and probably surprised Paul as well, when people come and you get chatting to them, they've come from places like Edinburgh, there's somebody from Wakefield, people from Brighton, and all these people from all over the UK, we're all coming to Little Lee in the middle of nowhere, in Greater Manchester, for a Peach Alley, memorial campaign gig, watching bands that were all big in the 70s, and it's been quite eye-opening, it's really well supported, and it's like having your own little community, it's like a big family, and it's been really, really good to see people, from all over the UK coming and turning up and showing their support. And I'm sure the businesses in Lee will be delighted as well, that there's people coming into town and spending money in town, booking hotels and, things like that. So.
Well, that's it. It's not just the memorial campaign, is it? It's having people coming from all over the country is a boost to the local community as well.
Yeah. When you look at the bigger picture, that's it, isn't it? When you look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, and it's certainly something that we've all been kind of reassessing this year in 2020 anyway, is, thinking about where we source various things, how we can support the local communities and all that. And I'm sure that it's something that we'll get onto later on in the conversation as well. But it just goes to show the power of Pete Shelley's songwriting with Buzzcocks and his solo stuff, that even all these years after their massive hit, they continued to tour and put the work in, and that's kind of garnered a real cult following. And I think it's a testament, really, isn't it, that these people are still going to the gigs and supporting your campaign. The final question that I want to put down before we get on to the questions about the campaign itself is, what is your favourite song either by Pete from his solo stuff or Buzzcocks?
Tough one, that one.
Yeah, who's going to go first?
It changes every time for me, really. I think thinking of Pete's work, I was really into I Believe. I was just playing that to death, that song. I mean, it's not one of the singles, but I just love that sort of refrain at the end of the song, and just the my instrument that I like to play is bass guitar, and at the end of it, there's just this moment at the end of the song where it's just like crazy, sort of a really aggressive bass line at the end of the song, and you know, there is no love in this world anymore. It's a great, you know, that lyric that's going on, and it's been repeated and repeated. I like that about Buzzcocks, that repetitiveness that they have. I think that's what The Fall have as well, in a way, in a strange way. So songs like ESP, which there's been a time in my life when I used to play that song to death just because of that guitar line that used to go over and over again. I love that relentless, you know, banging that sort of riff out, you know, and not caring about changing it, you know. It's and Boredom obviously is the other example of that, isn't it? Which is the ultimate guitar solo, the best guitar solo of all time. Just two notes, and it's
one and a half note guitar solo.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, obviously I've mentioned my love of The Fall. I think, you know, that it's just that it tends to change, you know, the specific songs. There's probably maybe a handful of Buzzcocks songs that I would always say that, you know, Orgasm As It is, I think when, as I mentioned around sort of Live Electric Circus, probably the first time I heard Buzzcocks, but when the singles Going Steady actually was a really big thing. I know it's a collection of, you know, greatest hits rather than being sort of an album, but that was just wall-to-wall genius of that. It's just that you was thinking, when's there going to be a duffer on this record? And there never was. It was all, they were all great, but Orgasm Addict was, for me, it was just like so powerful that it just blew my mind out, you know, and the lyrical craftsmanship. I know that it was, you know, lyrically, you know, penned by Howard Devoto, but it's, you know, just the way that Pete delivered it was just incredible.
It's a difficult one, but an easy one as well, because I will always say that my favourite Buzzcocks song is Boredom from the Survival Scratch EP, and simply because it was the beginning. It's the thing that started it all. It's the one that started it all. So to me, I would say Boredom, but obviously after that, I bought everything that what they did after that. You know, Orgasm Addict, What Do I Get? I Don't Mind. And then you go to the album tracks. There's some excellent album tracks, 16 Again in particular, excellent tracks. So it's difficult, because they're all good, but then it's easier as well because obviously Boredom began it all. So I'd go with Boredom because it was there at the beginning.
I think I'd say the same about Boredom, just because it's like it's erratic and it's in your face. But I think my all-time favourite Buzzcocks song would have to be Nostalgia or Real World. I like the lyrics in both, but I think it was Penetration's cover of Nostalgia that made me actually listen to it properly. I don't know what it is about it, but it's just, I think it's a proper crafted song.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out which album that's on.
Love Bites, I think. Right. Nostalgia is
there. Yeah.
Love Bites, yeah.
That's amazing. Doing the podcast, I really got into the later material, like the self-titled and Modern and Flatpak Philosophy especially. I thought that album was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't fully aware of the post 2000s stuff that they did, and listening to that stuff I was like, this band has still got it, you know. They were still cranking out amazing songs. And you're all right, you know, it's a very difficult question to answer, because there are such brilliant songs and they span the whole way through the band's career. But incredible songwriting, incredible. Those are the kind of icebreaker ones. I know that I said that it would be like, you know, quarter of an hour, 20 minutes or so, and we've been doing it for 40 minutes or something like that now. But we'll get into the meat of it now. Yeah, no, it does. And this is the thing, isn't it? It's what we were saying on Monday. When you're talking about music and you're talking about things, especially that you're properly passionate about, it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
Just give me a little bit of a potted history of the Pete Shelley Memorial campaign. How did it start and what was its original goal?
For many years, being from Leith, I was aware, and I know quite a lot of others, you know, of my age are aware, that Pete had never been recognised or honoured whatsoever by the town. It's as though he never existed. And I'm not blaming anybody for that, because Pete himself, by his own admission, said that, you know, he didn't like telling people that he came from Leith. because his mum still lived in Lee and he didn't want people mad than his mum. So, you know, you can understand that. But it was kind of sort of like disappointing that he was never honoured, even though it's understandable. And then when he passed away on the 6th of December 2018, it gave me, I don't know, sort of a strange feeling, sort of like anger in a way that, you know, that now he's gone and he's never been honoured, you know. And I immediately thought that it's got to change, you know, and I need to get together with his fans and we need to make sure that this changes type of thing. You know, he needs some recognition and honour. And it's simply because I know how it made me feel as a, you know, as a young lad, as a, you know, as 13. I was proud that I shared the same home time as Pete. And then I watched his career and I saw what he went on to do and what he went on to achieve. And, you know, that sort of like legacy. It's important, you know, for the town. It's important for future generations. And they need to see that. They need to see that, you know, you're up against it in Lee. You know, you've not got a lot of opportunities unless you travel out of Lee. But Pete showed that, you know, he started with nothing. And he went on to achieve massive things, you know. And that legacy needs to be preserved. And, you know, other generations need to see it. And he proves that anything's achievable. You know, he sort of like proved that throughout his career. So I felt passionate, you know, that way about it. And I vocally, on social media, on some local groups, I put something out saying that it's disgusting that he's never been honoured. And, you know, I went down that route sort of thing. You know, it's terrible and he should be honoured. And before you know it, that, you know, there was a few people agreeing with me. And it was sort of like escalated. Much to my surprise, the following day, I had contact from his family, members of his family, who still live in Lee. And there's me expecting to be told off by saying all this thing, you know, at a bad time. But they actually agreed with me and supported what I said. And sort of like encouraged me to, you know, if you feel that strongly about it, we'll support you, we agree with you, you know, go for it. And since then, obviously it's grown since then, and the family's been in touch, and we're in touch on a daily basis now. We've become good friends through it all. So the support and the encouragement from the family has always been there. And since that beginning, it has grown now, you know, and we have got like a big following, and we've, you know, we set out, you know, we had certain goals which we're ticking off one by one, and it's all been good, it's all been positive. I never anticipated it to be get so big and so busy like it has done lately, but that's where we're at now, you know, that just shows, you know, what Pete meant to so many people. My first port of call was I contacted my local councillor, who happens to be a music promoter in his first time, and I asked him the question, can you help with this type of thing? And he put on the first couple of fundraisers that we held in Wigan. So between us, we sort of like kick-started it. So he put on the events and I expanded the campaign on social media and grew the audience. So that was, you know, that's the beginning of it. And then it just sort of escalated from that. But also as well, something I forgot. I was sending emails left, right and centre to certain people to try and get them on board. And I remember emailing Andy Burnham, who's the mayor of Manchester, back in December. And he agreed with what I was saying, you know, saying, you know, Lee Ladd's done good. He should be honoured, you know. And he called a meeting at the Turnpike in Lee, which I attended. He attended. Members of Pete's family attended. Ellen, who's the lady from the Turnpike, she attended. Joe Platt, who was the local MP, she attended. And we had a discussion, just a formal discussion, really, you know, about, you know, how they all agreed, basically, he should be honoured. Mm. And then from that, we set up other meetings and everything developed from that. You know, there was a plan put in place, what we wanted to do and how we could achieve it type of thing. So it also like escalated from that. That was back in January 2019. And obviously since then, we've had loads of meetings, we've had loads of fundraisers and all sorts have gone on since then. So it's all been good.
Absolutely. And how did Paul Banks and Ellie get involved? We'll start with Paul.
I think it was originally intended that my partner Nicola was going to get involved, but Nicola mentioned it to me that one of my friends put, well, Nicola and Paul used to live on the same street when they were younger. So like Paul's originally got in contact with Nicola, but then it got passed over to me. And obviously I was delighted to get involved. As Paul said, Pete hasn't been recognised within the town. My feeling is that he's an icon for the modern age, really. He's somebody who can inspire young people in Lee. I mean, the thing about Lee, I think, at the moment, you're probably aware of, is that the only reason it's in the press is because of the last general election and the fact that, you know, the politics here are quite divisive at the moment. So for me, it was nice to get involved in something that was positive. And he's, you know, he's talking about somebody who we should be celebrating, really. So yeah, my involvement really is that, you know, Paul inspired me to get involved. And I got involved, I think, when the gig started to take place in Lee. We've run a few successful fundraisers at a club in Lee called the Abbey. Then we actually partnered up with the Turnpike Centre in Lee to run a gig that took place alongside the Understated exhibition, which was an exhibition where Malcolm Garrett was involved. It was displaying old Buscott's posters, lots of Malcolm Garrett's artwork. It was a fantastic exhibition. I think that's when the campaign, in a way, started really sort of moving forward as well. It started to get, you know, that national recognition, what we were trying to do. And I think it's just got better and better. I think obviously culminating in the blue plaque from last weekend, you know, we're in a really strong position. But, you know, we want to go further. You know, a blue plaque's fantastic, but we'll have something that celebrates Pete's life, an art form in the centre of Lee. That's our big aim and our aspiration now. Paul's a very persuasive character, and you know, I was delighted to get involved in the campaign. You know, he just drips with the passion for this, really. So I think Paul's really driven the campaign forward, and you know, for me, I'm just delighted to be involved as a fan. As simple as that, really. And you know, if we can make Lee a better place by celebrating Pete's life, that would be an amazing thing.
Brilliant. And what about you, Ellie? How did you get involved?
Well, I'm not actually from Lee. I'm from more central Manchester. So I was looking for concerts on in Manchester. This was, as Paul said earlier, the same week as the tribute concert at the Academy that I went to.
Yeah.
And it come up that there was a Pete Shelley related concert on. So I clicked on it and it said I wouldn't have been able to attend because I was at a different one. But I joined the group and I thought I'll keep on track with it and see if there's any in the future. And then I saw more people started to join, so I thought, right, it's taking off this. So I started following the group. And then I think Paul put a post out, or someone put a post out about volunteering or something. So I said, I can, you know, I'm quite handy with Photoshop and making posters, basically. So I said, I can do any of that. I can do photography, I can do whatever, if any of that's needed. And that's it. Yeah.
Excellent. So, Paul Banks, was it promotion that you're into, or what's your...
I think it's really around the sort of organisation of the gigs. I think one of the main services they offered, I think, to the campaign was running the bar on the gig at the Turnpike. So
A very important job.
And also doing a very chaotic light show. I think there's very much a DIY ethos in the campaign around how we do these things, which I'm sure that Pete will love, you know, because I think that was his attitude as well. The Turnpike gig in particular, for me, that was one of the high points, really. Being able to sort of run an event, not just sort of hire a room and expect to be staffed by other people. It was basically the campaign running the entire thing, really. So it's just getting stuck in, really. I think that's what I'm really enjoying about it. So it's like, you know, the gig we did at St. Joseph, which Paul mentioned, the last gig that he went to. Again, very much DIY, but everything was done by the campaign. Mm. We were, you know, from the publicity, you know, to staffing the doors, to make, you know, the campaign really, it's run by the generosity of others, fundamentally. It's not just us as a campaign team, it's all the bands. We've got our sound engineers who've been giving us time. And, you know, preferential rates as well for, you know, to do the sound. So I think that's what I've really enjoyed about it, and that's my involvement. It's just really been able to get stuck into putting those gigs on in a very much organised chaos way, really. And you know, the results have been fantastic. You know, I was brought up in Lee like Paul, and I think one of the things that's missing is that it has been a bit of a cultural void, to be honest. But I think what's been great about those nights is that it's like an event that you'd expect in Manchester, if that makes sense. They've been absolutely packed. There's been that enthusiasm and that enjoyment. So that's what I like, you know, like doing in the campaign, really, is really just sort of get, you know, that front end stuff of really just being involved in, you know, doing the bread and butter and the nitty gritty to putting the gigs on and organising the gigs.
Yeah. And so over the last 2 years, how many gigs would you say you've put on?
What are we up to, Paul?
Six, I think we're okay. We're at six now, I think.
Yeah.
So we've had six, but we also had family fun weekend as well. That was live music as well, but there was a craft fair and there was all other things going on as well. And none of us, you have to remember that none of us are music promoters, or, you know, none of us have any experience of this type of thing. So we're all doing it from how we think it should be done, and you know, and then watching it all come together, and then getting all the positive feedback at the end of it. You know, we're obviously doing something right. You know, we're selling out the gigs as well. Like, I said, it's been really good, really enjoyable to to actually put an event on, and you don't really know what you're doing, but you've done it, and you know, you've got positive results, you've made decent money from it for the campaign, and something quite heartwarming about that, you know what I mean? Because it's been our work, and you know, you've got your bands who are volunteering the time, your sound engineer who's volunteering his time, and we've had, like Paul said, we had the bar at the Turnpike that was staffed by all volunteers. We've had volunteers selling us raffle tickets for us, you know, at events. And the DIY ethos and the fact that it's a collective project and it's open to everybody to become involved. And people do get involved, you know, if they see you struggling, they'll offer to give you a hand. And, you know, don't me do this for you, don't me do that for you. And there's very much of that going on at all the events, which is brilliant. You know, it's like I said before, it's like a big family. Yeah, you know, you're all looking out for each other and all helping out when they can. They've all been good.
It was really unfortunate, I think, that we got hit by COVID, obviously. I mean, absolutely disaster for society in a way, but it was for the campaign, you know, from our perspective. It was like it stopped us dead in our tracks, but you know, we did put a virtual event on during COVID as well that was well received. Obviously, everybody's hoping that we can forget about 2020 and move on to 2021, but I think we're looking maybe at moving, obviously putting more events on in Lee, but maybe moving to putting events on in Manchester as well and elsewhere in the country. Because we have generated that interest as people approaching us now from Brighton, London, and internationally as well. So I think that might be a way to go forward with that. Again, recruiting more people. We're always looking for volunteers, fans of Pete, or you know, people who just want to get involved and do something good. We're a campaign looking for goodwill, and we've got a lot of goodwill. It's been a fantastic thing to be involved in, but there's definitely going to be bigger and better things for the campaign in 2021, and we're looking to, you know, expand the amount of live events that we're going to be putting on.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's incredible that you've put these things on essentially from scratch, and you're selling these shows out and gaining that support from people all over the country, like people traveling from all over the country to Lee. And then equally, like you said there, Paul, them also going back and then probably talking to their friends. And that's how you're getting these offers from elsewhere. I think it's incredible. And Paul Lally as well saying it's a family feel to it. That's what punk's all about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, go to the bands, you know what I mean? You ask any bands, do you fancy playing this? It's for Pete Shelley, you know, and the intention is we're going to get him a memorial for Lee Town Centre. And not once has anybody questioned it. They've all said, oh, yeah, definitely, yeah, you know, that's what it's for, yeah. And obviously, we couldn't do it without the bands and the people coming watching. And it's been amazing, you know. No one hesitates. Everyone says, oh, yeah, of course. And, you know, and then we've got people approaching us saying, next time you have a fundraiser, can I band play? And we're at that stage, you know, and it's really good, isn't it? And it, again, like I keep saying, it speaks volumes about Pete Shelley, don't it? Everyone wants to do something to get this goal. And there's something else to the campaign as well. Right at the end of it, once we've paid for a memorial, we want to set up as a foundation, which will be like a charity status. We'll continue fundraising then. Once the memorial's been paid for, we'll continue fundraising. Everything we raise will go straight back into the community, and it'll help the youth in the area in music and arts and writing and things like that. And you know, it came up with that idea, and Pete's widower and Pete's family, you know, they've all said, what an excellent idea. You know, that's Pete all over. Pete was all about helping and supporting people. And they're sort of like, you know, they're saying, what an excellent idea. And for us, it keeps his name alive as well, you know. Yeah. Keeps his legacy alive, and, you know.
Absolutely. And it's great that you've got the support of the family as well.
Yeah. And we've also got Malcolm Garrett as well. You know, Malcolm Garrett joined our team. And he's working with us. We quite often have meetings with him on Zoom.
Yeah,
he fully supports the campaign and the campaign's goals, and he's very much, you know, a part of it. You know, he's chasing our aims with us. You know, he's a very, very much an active part of it, and you know, going forward, he's good to have on board.
That's pretty incredible as well, because for those who are listening who might not know, Malcolm Garrett was the artist who came up with the sleeves for Orgasm Addict and another Music in a Different Kitchen, along with quite a few others, and also went on to do stuff for Duran Duran and other bands like that. It's incredible. And he's taken an active role in the group.
He did an amazing speech as well, Malcolm, on the unveiling of the blue plaque. It was really emotional and from the heart. Mm. And I think having Malcolm's input is hopefully going to lead towards a lasting memorial that's not only going to look amazing, that it will, you know, and have that authenticity, because obviously Malcolm was a very close friend of Pete's. but it'll be something that people want to see. You know, they want to come to Lee and look at it. That's our sort of aspiration. That's the stage that we're at now. The blue plaque's in place. That's helping to keep Pete's story alive in Lee. But our next name, obviously, is that memorial that we're looking for. And Marvin Malcolm on board is a dream, really. He's such a lovely man. And the way he speaks about Pete's is just inspirational. So we feel really lucky and privileged to have him on board.
And you've had some fairly, I would say, well-known in terms of the punk scene kind of bands involved in the gigs as well, right? It's not just local bands playing. These have been around alive and kicking for a while, right? So if you list off a few of the names of the bands that you've had at the gigs.
We've had the Drones, who were obviously early days, punk scene. They started in 76, 77. And they played at the last fundraiser. We've had the Distractions, again, around from the early days, 76, 77. They played at the last fundraiser. We've had Not Sensibles, who were retired and came out of retirement especially to play that fundraiser.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I didn't have to beg them to do anything. I asked them the question and you know, straight away, yeah, of course we will, yeah, yeah. And they came out of retirement, they rehearsed for it and put on, you know, they did their bit and brilliant. Fast Cars as well, we've had them. And coming up on the next fundraiser, we've got a band called The Yardbirds, who were made up of members of The Things, who were around in the 80s, and John Mayer, who was the original drummer of Buzzcocks, drums with The Things. So there's that connection there. It seems, you know, a lot of the bands have all got a connection to Pete back in the early days. And we've got V2 as well. They're in touch with us quite a lot, and they want to play at a future fundraiser. And they were, you know, they're back from 76, 77. So there's that strong connection, you know, that Manchester 76, 77 connection, all wanting to do their bit, you know, to be involved, really, really good.
Again, it comes down to that community as well, doesn't it? Indeed. The kind of 70s punk community all started out in that DIY way as well, and can obviously see that same passion in yourselves. And again, it speaks to Pete Shelley and his legacy, doesn't it? And his ethics and everything.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, another as well. I mustn't forget. Do you remember the Freshies, Chris Seavey, Frank Sidebottom?
Yeah.
Remember the Freshies? They were penciled in to play at our next fundraiser. And you think about their work after Chris Seavey passed away. They obviously got a statue of Frank Sidebottom in Timperley. So to us, they're quite relevant because obviously they're from the same time. Chris knew Pete. And obviously the band didn't hesitate. Yeah, of course we'll play. Yeah, yeah. They fully support what we're trying to achieve because obviously they've all been through it themselves. You can look at all the bands, and I know we've had local bands playing, but they've wanted to play, and it's about opening it up and involving everybody. When they want to play, you know, we encourage them to play. Of course you can play. Yeah, yeah, we'll get you on. If we can't get you on that one, we'll get you on the next one. But it's open to everybody, and that's what's so good about it. You know, it's got to be a collective thing, you know, everybody's welcome to get on board and do what they need to do.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's all pre-COVID as well. Since COVID, like you said, Paul, you've done a virtual gig. Have you managed to get anyone involved in the campaign who otherwise might not have? Because I know that during 2020, it's actually a lot easier to get in contact with people because they're literally not doing anything. So is there anyone who might have been a harder get who you've managed to get involved this year because of the situation we've all found ourselves in?
We have a guy called Krishna that works with us. He's part of the campaign team. He's on the committee. And his background, he's very much into IT. So he helps us with the online stuff and the videos. But we have had some excellent results. Well, I don't want to keep hogging now. I'll pass it over to Paul, and then Paul can tell you, you know, what we've had and who we've had.
I think one of the big eye-openers was when, obviously, with the blue plaque, is there's people who've approached initially in the campaign who were a bit, I suppose, sceptical, if that's a fair way of saying about it, about what our aims were. And then it's obviously transpired in recent times that we've got very sort of laudable aims in the campaign. So I think when Christian and Paul have put the shout-out for contributions to the video around the blue plaque, we've had the likes of Matt Riley, Johnny Marr, John Cooper Clark, who have come forward and said, yeah, we would love to contribute to that video. And, you know, we've had loads and loads of people we just didn't think would be you're interested in contributing, really, which I suppose is testament to the strength of the idea behind what we're trying to achieve. So I think that's what's been notable, you know, in recent months. So I think it's just going to get better and better in that as well. I think what we're finding now is that people are coming to us, whereas I think when we were starting the campaign, it was, I think Paul especially was run ragged, sort of, you know, getting in contact with, you know, everybody under the sun really to try to get some support. But now I think it's sort of, the things have changed now, I think. Now they see that, you know, what we're trying to achieve, and more people are definitely coming forward who knew Pete and who are fans of Pete's work. And it's been, I mean, that video of, you know, if anybody's listening to the podcast and they get a chance, you know, to visit the Pete Memorial Campaign page and look at Malcolm's speech, that video, and I think it shows what it does give a good indication of where we are as a campaign.
Yeah, definitely. That speech is, like you say, incredibly emotional. And I saw a video of John Cooper Clarke as well doing a bit of a tribute too. And that guy is a hero of mine as well. So the initial goal of the campaign was to get the blue plaque in memorial for Pete up on the wall of his childhood home. Not the home he was born in, but the one where he grew up, right?
It's the one he called home.
Yeah.
That's how we look at it. It's the one that he called home. It's the one that he spent most of his youth there growing up in. So it's what he called home. And his mum continued to live there for the rest of her life as well after Peter moved on. So it was quite relevant that it went there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've said before, but when you look at the plaque, the room at the side of the plaque was actually Pete's bedroom.
So
it's quite significant that the plaque's... I didn't know myself until the Friday on the unveiling.
Oh, that's incredible.
A member of the family told me that, yeah, well, that was Pete's bedroom. So.
Oh, that's great. And how did each of you feel about kind of achieving that goal? Were you all there at the unveiling?
I wasn't there.
Right. So, Ellie, you couldn't get there. Were you otherwise engaged?
Isolating.
Oh, I see. What a pain. Are you going to make a pilgrimage to it after you finished isolating?
Definitely. Yeah. I'll finish now. I'm planning to go as soon as I can.
How was it to know that you were part of a group that has managed to get this done? What was the feeling? And especially when you watch that video of Malcolm giving the speech, what was your feeling?
It's incredible, isn't it? When you think of how many people have come together to get that to happen, it's quite mind-blowing, really, because you think they're not the biggest band, you know, they're not the Clash, they're not the Sex Pistols, and while they were big, you don't expect that to come out of a community effort. But when you look at it as it is, it's exceptional, as you could say.
The partnerships that we've created, I think, have really helped to make the blue plaque happen. There's obviously partnerships that we've had with the Turnpike in Lee, which is a local CRC which focuses on arts and culture. As Wigan Council have been involved in that as well, who funded the blue plaque. And we're thinking that's really going to help us move forward now. We're obviously working with that partnership group to talk about having a lasting memorial actually within the centre of Lee, which will fit in some of the developments. That's our sort of move forward. But the blue plaque, it was almost like there's some permanence there now, isn't there, really? Is that, you know, it's always going to be there. And that, and I think that's what was inspirational about, you know, talking to Paul Lally originally around this, is that idea that we want to keep that narrative alive. So that blue pack is going to really help that now. But we can move that forward even further now. You know, we can perhaps create a, you know, memorial within the centre of Lee, potentially. And again, that's what's going to inspire future generations. Pete's an amazing icon. That DIY ethos and, you know, his creativity and the body of work that he's got is, you know, you can't help but be impressed. And if you're a young person growing up in Lee and you know that Pete did that, coming from this town, it can only inspire.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul Lally, from someone who was there from kind of day one, from ground zero, how did it feel for you?
Well, for me, right at the beginning, I called for a statue, a blue plaque, a bench with his name on it, murals all over Lee of Pete. You know, I called for everything I could call for.
Yeah, going all out.
Obviously, when things start moving, then obviously you get a bit sensible about it and you see what can be achieved. Obviously, these were the things that were discussed at the meetings, you know, the blue plaque, the exhibition at the Turnpike that Malcolm curated, and then the permanent memorial. So we sort of like had a checklist of things we wanted and we're ticking them off as we do them. So now to get the partnership working with Wigan Council was very important. And what I found reassuring is, they've listened to us. They've understood from a local point of view how it means locally. You know, Lee's often quite neglected and, you know, and Pete's been overlooked. And this is an opportunity for everyone. And, you know, people in Lee should feel proud. They've been overly impressed because we put events on in Lee. And there is no live music venues in Lee. So we've created our own live music venues, put live events on, and we brought people into Lee. So they've been overly impressed with that. And then obviously, they funded the blue plaque. So to me, to see something physical and actually see a result, it's a great moment. You think, great, excellent, that's one massive step, you know, and then the next step, we'll get the same feeling again. But yeah, I think it's the start of many things that we still want to achieve.
Mm.
But it's very important because it is that first physical thing that so it will help us.
Absolutely. What was the process of figuring out what was going to be on the plaque? Who chose the lyric?
Well, first of all, it was just going to be a plaque with Pete's name on it. And then we asked, at the meetings we go to, we asked, can we extend that bit and have something a bit personal on it? And they said, yeah, of course, yeah, what have you got in mind? So then after that, we discussed as a campaign what I think would be relevant. And obviously the song lyrics are obvious. And obviously we involved Pete's family as well, in deciding what words would be on there. So collectively as a campaign and with the family, that's what we came to. And when you look at it, it's very relevant, It's Pete. When you just read it, you just immediately, you immediately think Pete.
Yeah.
Anybody in the future looking at it might think, well, what does all that mean? But then they'll go away and they'll research Pete and it'll all, make sense, won't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, rather than have you ever fallen in love with someone you shouldn't have, having life's an illusion, love is a dream, like you say, it's much more fitting and much more a reflection of who Pete was. And like, you're right, it might make some people Google it and go down a rabbit hole, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, one of the things when I've been having discussions in the campaign, right at the beginning, I spoke with Deborah Gervie a lot, who's Steve Gervie, who was the bass player in the Buzzcocks. It's his wife. She supported the campaign through the beginning. And I've had quite a lot of conversations and she throws a lot of ideas and puts personal things in there. And I remember when we first met Malcolm, early days in 2019, just before the exhibition. And I remember Deborah Gervie came up with an idea and she said to me, I can see a mural of Pete in a spaceship, just floating in space with some lyrics underneath it. And I thought, that doesn't mean anything to me, that didn't mean anything. Oh, talking about cheese is what she said, Pete floating in space and then talking about cheese. So to me, not a clue, it didn't mean anything to me, but I mentioned it to Malcolm. I said, oh, Deborah Gervie said it. And the big smile on his face, he said, you know what? He says, that's Pete in a nutshell.
Okay.
So, the fact that all them people have all got personal bits, what they can put into the campaign, it makes it all relevant. It's not as though it's just some nutcase from Lee that's come up with an idea. There's a lot of people had a lot of input into it, you know what I mean? So it is all fitting and all relevant,
Yeah. And did you ever reach out to Steve Diggle?
Yes, yeah, quite a lot. We've had contact with the band. We spoke with his present manager, Raph. Mm. We spoke with Steve Diggle's management. I think, like Paul said earlier on, in the early days, there was a bit, what are these lot up to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I understand that, he wouldn't think like that. But they have, as time's gone on, they have helped and supported. I mean, they give us a load of T-shirts for us to sell at the events. That was provided from Buzzcocks management team. Take them T-shirts, sell them at the events, keep the money, stick it into your campaign pot. So,
all right.
So they've been involved and developed where they can.
Mm. But yeah, I suppose it's that whole thing of view you with suspicion until you've proved what you're about. And I guess the plaque is proving what you're about.
That's helped, yeah. Well, pre that, we had the exhibition. The Buzzcocks management team came down to that exhibition we had in Lee in November, and we sort of met them then, November 2019, we met them for the first time, really. Everything else before that had been emails and telephone calls. So, I think as it goes on, like you said, it shows its worth and it shows it's all genuine and it's not just a gang of nutters from Lee what have come up with a crazy idea, I think the evidence is there now that everything's been genuine, everything's worked. We've raised a decent amount of money. We've got the blue plaque and it's onwards and upwards. Malcolm Garrett's now working with us. So everything's moving on at a massive pace. Really.
Yeah. Well, the pair of you, Pauls, have both said that there's other things in the pipework. So what is next for the campaign?
I think really it's getting back into, fundraising through live events. I think that's what's in our mind at the moment. We don't really know what's going to go on in terms of sort of COVID and, with the vaccine that's come out, whether, what's going to be the time that things are going to get back to a degree of normality. We do have a gig that is planned, but it's in February, but it's probably, we're not sure if that's going to go ahead or not at the moment. So we've had to cancel it, obviously, because of the pandemic a couple of times now. So, and then again, that's at the Turnpike. That's what we want to get back in. We've had a lot of people join the campaign from around the country and around the world, really. So I think maybe reaching out to those people as well We've been joining with other campaign groups. We were trying to do similar things. There's a group that's looking at preserving Joe Strummer's legacy. We've reached out to us and we've joined them with them. So it's, I think it's about reflecting on where we've gone, trying to push forward that fundraising, but, you know, taking the campaign maybe to different towns. We'll obviously always want things to take place in Lee because Lee needs it. Lee needs those live events going on, but we can certainly can broaden our horizons about where these campaign fundraising events can take place. And we've made loads of great friends who've been so generous. We're in a really strong position now, having the Blue Plaque in place. It's like we've got that benchmark now. That's where we're at. We can use that as a springboard to go forward now with things. So let's just see when we can all get back to normal in 2021, and we'll start putting those live events on. And, you know, a lot of our new friends that we've made have already, you know, said that they would absolutely love to play those events. So I think we'll be very, very active in towards the middle of 2021 and forward from them.
Mm. And you're also talking about other initiatives beyond the Blue Plaque into kind of something to do with kids in music.
Yeah, I think part of the work that what we're looking to do, we've been working close. There's a new heritage centre that is currently under construction in the centre of Lee. And again, this is something through Wigan Council. We've been in discussions with officers in the heritage team about how we could potentially run workshops, which are educational workshops, which are telling Pete's story. You know, it could be workshops around lyrics, it could be workshops around music. And Krishna, who's involved in the campaign, who's got some incredible skills with video making, you know, we're hoping that he's going to be able to help us to create those resources and obviously get some permanence around Pete's story in that centre. You know, there's a local library in Lee as well, so it's about having a repository of Pete's work, I suppose. There's loads of work that came out from the Understated exhibition that potentially could have permanent residence in that heritage centre as well. So Pete's definitely going to figure in that new building. We're trying to get Pete's face everywhere, I think. That's the, you know, that's our sort of idea. What we have found, and more from what we won't mention, is that a lot of local schools have actually been doing work on local heroes and icons. And Pete's figured really heavily in that work, which is independent of the campaign. So we've not been prompting people to do that. So that narrative is already developing. We've had a group that actually lives in Central Lee, Neighbours Group, that's completed these sort of discs of icons where you've got 10 icons from Lee and Pete's one of those icons. And again, something that we haven't prompted. It's been the young people in those communities who've been driving that forward. So we're absolutely delighted that story is being carried on in those ways.
Mm.
I think that's, for us, that's central to the campaign. It's keeping that story alive.
Yeah.
So us working with, you know, partners in the Heritage Centre and with Wigan Council and with the Turnpike and local communities, it's going to really help that. But that will be as important as the memorial itself, if the story's alive.
Well, it looks like there's a lot on for 2021. It looks like you guys have got a lot of work left to do. And it's a good place to leave it on that hopeful look into the future. But what is your hope for 2021?
I think, and I'll just add to what Paul said there. Yeah. I think right at the beginning of the campaign, what opened my eyes was I thought everybody in Lee knew who Pete Shelley was. And it turns out 3/4 of the people that live in Lee didn't even know who he was and that he came from Lee. But now I can look back, and we can all look back, and we can all, like Paul said about the schools doing work about Pete, and we can all look back and be proud of the fact that we've actually raised the profile of Pete in Lee, and now everybody in Lee knows, you know, who Pete Shelley is, and they came from Lee, and it's all evident that, you know, that works. He's in the local newspaper, at least, you know, he must have been in about 20 times since we started doing the campaign, and it's all, you know, stories about the campaign, all about Pete Shelley. And obviously, it's evident that you see the schools doing work around Pete Shelley, who nobody knew about, you know what I mean, before that. It's evident that whatever we've been doing it right. And I think that's why it's grown and it just continues to grow. So for me, looking forward, we've still got aims. We still need to do them. But I can see them all. It's all coming together.
Mm.
And in the end, obviously, we'll have the foundation and the old community then will benefit on the back of all this work, what we've just spent 2 years doing. I think the future, it looks good. You can see where it's going, and you can see what you've done, and you can see exactly where it's leading to. So it will be good for the community in the area.
That's good. Bang that drum.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't want to keep banging that drum because I'm sick of seeing my own name in the newspaper. I keep saying, you know, every time that it's a collective project, and I couldn't have done this without all that help and the support from everybody that you know, from Paul and Krishna and Ellie, you know, everyone what's been actively involved in it and actually doing the graft, from the bands that are playing, the sound engineers, the venues that allow us to use their venues, the people that come along and spend their money on the merchandise and come along to the gigs. Without all that, it wouldn't have happened. We couldn't have got there. So it is a massive collective project, and everyone's been involved and everyone's played their part. So when I bang that drum, I bang it on behalf of everybody. You know, everyone's been brilliant. Everyone's got us to where we are. Mm.
No, I know you're the reluctant figurehead. I know that for sure. But again, it's a testament to your hard work as well as everyone else organising this campaign. It's a great thing. Ellie, what about you? What's your thoughts for 2021, both personally and for the campaign?
Well, I think it's just repeating what's already been said. I mean, it's higher, further, faster, get where we can, see what can be done, push any boundaries that come up, get what's possible and do it and do more. Mm. And hopefully get past everything that's happened this year, every negative thing that's happened this year at least, and keep it going.
Well, I can imagine it's given you guys a sense of something positive to focus on during this year, which has been quite challenging for everyone.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's been a nice thing to be able to be a part of when there's nothing else to be a part of.
And Paul, what about yourself? What are you hoping for the group and you know, ahead into 2021?
Personally, I think for 2021 is actually to get back into, and it sounds a bit of a selfish thing, to get back in a pub and have a drink with some friends and chat about music, life. And I'm quite a traditional bloke, really. When I finish work, I like to pop into a pub in Wigan, which I meet up with one of my friends who's a massive Fall fan as well. And we just talk about music and politics and, you know, life in general. And that's the thing that I've really missed. But for the campaign, the next time we can do a live event, that's when I'll be happy again. Those live events, they are something else. I've been mentioning about that DIY, it's all organised, about everybody pulling their weight and getting together to make something happen. The campaign is completely, there's no pretensions in the campaign. Everybody's just, you know, doing it for the right things, and it's a real joy to be a part. So I think when we get that next live event sorted and it's taking place, the engine of the campaign will be moving again, and we'll, you know, start seeing the funding coming back. You know, start creating those funds again for that memorial. And it's going to happen soon. I'm sure by the middle of 2021, we'll be back on it.
Yeah, I think it's such an important thing, both the pub and getting out there and getting involved with music and stuff. There's nothing better than getting together with friends over a drink and putting the world to rights. And there's also equally nothing better, in my view, than going to see some bands play live, whether it's songs you know, whether it's songs you don't. I really hope everything is returning to some sort of normal after the vaccine comes out, so that you guys can get on and keep promoting, keep putting on shows. It sounds like you're doing the Lord's work up there, and I'm sure Pete's happy with it. He must be.
On that, can I just throw something in there? So, something that I remember from the campaign. When was it, the Understated exhibition in Leeds? There's a member of Pete's family, it's an elderly lady, and she's Pete's auntie. And she approached me and gave me a big hug. And she said to me, and these words will stick with me forever, and they're inspirational, really. But she said, Pete's mum and Pete's dad will be so proud of everything that you've done and everything that you lot are doing within the campaign. And she said, I'll tell you something, well, Margaret, Pete's mum, she'll be waiting for you up there, and there'll be a big hug waiting for you when you get up there. And they're just words that, you know, they've stuck, and it's nice, isn't it? You know, it's something that I'll always remember. You know, I'll never forget that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that is a great way, I think, to end up. So thank you, Paul Lally, Paul Banks, Ellie Porter, for your time today. Thank you for being on. Thank you for sharing your story. And hopefully I'll be able to put that out there. Before I do wrap it up, though, where can people find the campaign online?
We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. We also have a website, www.peteshellingmemorial.com. They can contact us by email. All the information will be on there. It's peteshelling.msc@gmail.com. Across social media, if you just search for Pete Shelling Memorial, you'll find us easy enough. We're all over the place.
Well, that's brilliant. Again, thank you so much for your time this evening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Tom. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Cheers, guys. There it is. It was an absolute delight to talk to Paul, Ellie and Paul about the Pete Shelley Memorial Campaign. I'm sure you'll agree, their passion is infectious.
please do search them out on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to visit PeteShelleyMemorial.com and buy some merch from them. They have an album of bands covering Shelley's songs called Yesterday's Not Here, and an Etsy page where they're selling t-shirts, blue plaque badges and fridge magnets. And all the money goes back into the campaign to fund future events and initiatives. Once more, a big thank you to Paul Lally, Paul Banks and Ellie Porter for giving up their time to talk to me, and for you for listening. See you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for Band Biographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.